made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Orange Taxi, a new taxi company providing services to the U of I campus and the Champaign-Urbana area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 367-8888.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inch. Glad to have you with us. This morning, we welcome back to the program Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and is here monthly, and we talk about lawn and garden care. This is your opportunity to call in and ask questions. Maybe you have some problem. You need to get some advice on how to solve it. You're still something that's lingering from this past season. Maybe you are already starting to think about what you're going to plant next season, or maybe there's some kind of problem that you just want to make sure you next year you head that off, or you have questions about houseplants. We can do that too. Any and all of that, things that have to do with growing stuff around the home landscape. That's what we're doing here this morning. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Maybe I'll mention here right up front that now for many years, we've been doing the show with Sandy. And about this time of the year, it comes and we have taken a break off for the winter time. And I guess in part because I thought, well, maybe we wouldn't get very many calls. And Sandy has always said, low these many years, she said, if you want, I would continue to do the show. I would come here every month. And we've always said, well, you know, someday, maybe we'll do that. So we've decided someday has arrived. So now, next month, instead of saying goodbye here at the end of the show, we're just going to say, we'll see you next month. So she will be here in December, January, February, and on until she gets so sick of us that she doesn't want to come over anymore.
So basically, after 12 years, I wore you down.
Exactly. I finally, yes, my resistance was exhausted after 12 years. I think we just didn't want to take advantage of your good nature.
Well, you're very kind.
Well, we have calls. How about that? Okay, let's start with a caller in Champaign and line number one. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I had a couple of fall-type questions. First off, we have some hardy crepe myrtles, and they say to mulch it. How deep does that mulch have to be, and how far of a radius around the plant does it have to be?
Yeah, crepe myrtles are one of those that, you know, if we were in a more southern state, they'd be woody trees. I mean, they really can get quite large. But up here, usually they kind of act like butterfly bushes. I don't know if you've ever had a butterfly bush. Sometimes they actually die clear down to the ground, but then they'll pop back up from the roots. So you're really trying to, as far as trying to protect them, I think I would go, you know, I assume this is just a small
branch.
I would probably go at least maybe a 2-foot diameter around it. And probably what I would think about doing is maybe just getting some chicken wire, making a little cylinder, and then just filling that full of leaves. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to do a little extra protection, you might even put before you do that, you might put a little mound of soil, kind of like the way we treat roses, and then just hope for the best.
How deep would that be?
How deep, as in the soil, or as in the...
How deep on the mulch?
On the mulch, I would probably, with most of the chicken wire, you're probably going to 3 feet or so.
3 feet?
Yeah. I mean, the chicken, when you buy chicken wire, okay, it usually comes in 3-foot rolls.
But no, I mean, how deep would the mulch layer be on top of the dirt?
Well, you're making a cylinder.
Oh, okay.
Around it, and so it actually ends up being about 3 feet deep. You're trying to protect that whole woody part is what you're trying to protect.
Okay. Also, my wife spied some bamboo growing in town, and she was offered a start. She doesn't know whether to plant it this fall or in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you could probably do either one. You probably might be getting a little bit late. Now, is this one that's... Did she see it growing? Is this one of them that tends to get quite rampant?
Yeah, well, she was thinking of containing it in a garbage can, cutting the bottom out of a garbage can.
Okay. As long as there's an understanding. I think you're getting a little bit late now as far as doing a whole lot of perennial-type transplanting. We can certainly do trees and shrubs, but probably for a lot of the perennials, I'd probably be more looking at spring.
Okay. All right. And lastly, we did this on a new house, so I have all these questions, but we put in a lawn. We seeded it in September, and we had that long dry spell, and mm-hmm. it came up kind of patchy here and there, and now I don't know what to do. Should I overseed it? Should I rake up the straw? Should I fertilize it. What do you have?
Mm-hmm. So you have some grass that's come up. It's just not as
it's not
thick as you'd like.
Well, in some places, some of it's due to the lack of seeding. Some of it's due to lack of water.
Right.
Help.
Right, and so it's been since September. Actually, I would think about fertilizing it, certainly using one of the winterizer-type fertilizers. It's not too late. Actually, even for established lawn, it's not too late to fertilize. And I would think about fertilizing it. And then come spring, you might see what's going on to see how good it looks, if it looks any better. And then I'd really think about doing some overseeding in the spring.
Should we rake up the straw first that we put down?
I really wouldn't worry about it, unless the straw is really thick, which it shouldn't have been, but the grass will grow right up through it.
Okay, we're worried about the seed hitting the ground.
Pardon?
We're worried about a seed hitting the ground.
Oh, you mean next spring?
Yes.
I would wait and see how much of it's degraded. You probably find that there's still plenty of holes in there. My only concern is sometimes if you do a lot of heavy raking, you're actually going to do some damage on those young seedlings. So that would be the only thing I'd be a little concerned about. But I would just see how thick the straw is. If it's particularly thick, then you might have to take it up in those spots.
All right, so we'll fertilize.
Thank you very much. Good luck.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go on to someone in Downs. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Sandy, I have a couple of shrub planting questions. One is that I have some container shrubs that I want to plant, and the nurseries have convinced me that I should be using Fertilom's root stimulator when I plant. Are you familiar with it?
Mm-hmm.
Can I still use that? Or is it, I'm thinking about the fall fertilizing problem.
Sure, I wouldn't hesitate to use it
okay. This
time of year. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the other question that I have is that I'm going to plant a couple of low-growth sumacs, and I have one that I want to move. Mm-hmm. Is it too late to move it? I can wait till spring. It's not.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You could probably get away with it and probably be fine. I think I'd be more inclined maybe to wait till spring, March or April, early spring.
Okay.
Or even late winter. I'd be more apt to do it then, because then you know the really cold stuff's over with, and then you should have better success, I would think.
Okay, so you think that would be better than...
Yeah, you could probably get away with it, but I think if I can wait, I'd probably wait.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going outside.
All right. Good luck.
We'll go on to Indiana here. The next caller's line four. Hello.
I'm wondering about if there is a great discussion about whether raking leaves or just mowing them into small particles so they fall down into the dirt and hopefully become part of the dirt. Does that make any sense?
Oh, sure. And there's nothing wrong with mowing the leaves and just making them small particles, like as you say. It's just the biggest problem we might have is that if you have really thick layers, like several inches, then you might have a problem where either the grass might die or actually over the wintertime, sometimes it gets this stuff called snow mold, which actually ends up making it die anyway. So you can have some lawn problems. But there's certainly no problem with, putting them on your flower beds, let them blow up into the perennial flower beds, and that really acts as a nice mulch. So it's really on the lawn we probably worry about the most.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Champagne is next. This is line number three. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about lawns. I'm not a big fan of lawns, but I know that they're here to stay. And I prefer, other plantings.
Sure.
But I've been very concerned that there are all these winterizer lawn products that contain 2,4-D to prevent broadleaf things from coming into your lawn, like nasty creeping Charlie. But... I'm actually amazed that no one seems to be concerned about, broadcasting all this 2,4-D in lawns all across America, and should we be concerned about that?
Well, and I think you'll find that not some people are quite concerned about that. I guess my feeling is on several different things is especially with what you're talking about, where you really maybe all you want to do is fertilize. You really don't want the weed killer or need the weed killer. I would find those products that don't have it in it, and there are winterizer type fertilizers that don't have the herbicide in them, and so that certainly can be done. And I think everybody kind of has to make those choices on what do I really expect from a lawn. I think sometimes we have these really grand ideas about lawns. We see golf tournaments and the lawns look so, the putting greens are this perfect thing. And people don't realize just how much energy and pesticides it takes to make those look good. So I think sometimes we have maybe not the best expectations sometimes when it comes to lawn. So you have to decide. But I think the other thing is, for a lot of these, is to do spot treatments. Don't do the whole lawn. If you don't need to do an herbicide on the whole lawn, don't do the whole lawn. Just do those areas where you're just having creeping Charlie problems or violets or whatever. Or just decide that it's green and I don't care if there's creeping Charlie out there. So I think there's a lot of people sort of making those determinations. They may not feel that way, but there certainly are people out there. And I would look for a different fertilizer if you truly don't want the herbicide.
Okay, well, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, going on to Piatt County, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Two questions. First of all, I had a ficus, a small ficus about 3 feet tall that I left outside this summer. It was very happy.
Mm-hmm.
But it is now, I see, a root is coming out, was coming out of the bottom of the pot. So I carefully repotted it, and I read up about pots, and I got, I think, the right size. And then I saw in the Tribune on Sunday, I used old potting soil from my old summer plant.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tribune article in the Home and Garden said that that would be considered inert and not good, and now it's all repotted. I was just wondering, is old potting soil a bad idea?
Well, there's a lot of feeling out there one way or the other. I guess my feeling is if the plant has not died for some unknown reason, say you think it might have had a disease problem, especially things like root rots and stuff, I wouldn't be too upset about using soil over again.
Mm-hmm.
Usually what I like to, because, you know, it can get expensive, especially
mm-hmm.
if you're doing large containers. What I like to do is actually maybe take it out, remove all the roots. If there's any roots or any stuff in there,
mm-hmm.
I would certainly remove all that, and then I just replenish it with some newer stuff.
Okay.
And then I don't know. Are you talking about a true potting mix, or is it a soilless mix? I'm not sure what they're talking about. Inert.
It's a true potting mix, just for
it has soil in it.
Yeah.
I wonder if they were talking about soilless mixes.
Yeah, that's what.
Which are two different things.
Yeah.
Right, right. Because potting soil truly has soil in it, mm-hmm. which certainly would have a certain amount of nutrients in it.
Okay.
And whereas these soilless type mixes pretty much are just sort of a growing medium. You have to pretty much add the fertilizer and stuff
mm-hmm.
to them in order for it to have much nutrients value.
But I don't fertilize it over the winter, right?
Right. Okay. Unless you have a greenhouse or supplemental lighting, you really don't want to fertilize it. So
okay,
I think you're fine with that.
Okay.
I don't
Thank
think
you so
there's
much.
An issue.
The second
mm-hmm.
question is, now I'm becoming obsessed with bulbs. And I saw they were all half price at one of our stores.
Yeah.
So does that mean they're still okay?
Go for it.
Okay. Well, I did, actually.
This afternoon. And it looks like it's going to be a great afternoon.
Well, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
It.
I'm running out there. But is it, I read so much conflicting information on bulbs. Is it okay to, the ground is very damp but not wet.
Mm-hmm.
Should I still be watering after I finish planting them?
I certainly right after you plant them,
uh-huh.
I would still water, unless
okay.
you know it's going to rain that afternoon. I'd still water because even though we can't see anything, they still send out roots and they still do things in the fall that
mm-hmm.
we just can't see it.
Okay.
And it's not too late. Now, if we start getting into December mm-hmm. and, you know, and it starts to really, the ground gets really frozen, then.
Yeah.
But
I won't be out there then.
Right, right. But I have actually had people say that they've forgotten about the bulbs. They went out there with one of those bulb augers, the ground was frozen, went out there and planted some tulips, and the darn thing still came up. So
yeah, they want
go
live.
Figure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not ideal. But
yeah, should I be putting, I've been sprinkling a little bone meal on them for
mm-hmm.
Root activism. Is that okay?
You know, that's fine. They have found that more and more that actually a complete fertilizer is better. You know,
okay.
bone meal only gives you a certain amount of phosphorus in there, which is good, but you'd be better off with something like a 5-10-10
okay.
or something that actually has some nitrogen in it as well as potassium. So something a little bit more complete is actually better for the bulb.
Okay, and then when they come up in the spring, should I then fertilize them after they bloom or ignore them? Or
you certainly can, and a lot of times people will do that right after they bloom.
Okay.
Hey,
okay,
have
well,
fun.
I'm going outside. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, we'll know what you're doing this afternoon.
Okay.
Just to review, as you said, I think that there are some people who would say, as long as you can work the soil, you can plant bulbs. But in fact, is there some sort of ideal period or yeah, some sort of yeah. period once you get past that generally the recommendation is that you've waited too long?
Yeah, ideally is to do it through October. I mean, that's really a good time because we still have some halfway decent weather to the point where they can set out roots. You know, a lot of it is, you know, how healthy is the bulb? Because with bulbs, the bigger the better with those. And you'll find that you're if you're really paying a lot of money for bulbs, you find that often they're bigger bulbs. So if I had maybe I really bought some really cut rate bulbs where they were very small and then I planted them really late, you're sort of putting one more thing, one more strike against them. So part of it has to do with just the health of the bulb. But I planted bulbs a couple weekends ago and I have great hopes for them.
Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and is here monthly on Tuesday, the second Tuesday, I think it is.
It is.
And we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So if you have questions, you can call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Next, we have a caller in Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I was moving a path in my garden and had to dig up some of my iris. Now, I thought I was paying attention to my iris to make sure that I caught any disease, because I seem to sometimes get these borers in the corms.
Mm-hmm.
But I had another vigorous plant growing next to them, and they kind of covered up the iris, and I didn't see until I started digging the iris to move them. And realized I had a lot of rotted stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I cut all the rotted stuff out, and I noticed, I thought that you're supposed to get rid of the old leaves now and not put it in your compost heap in case you had eggs for whatever this mm-hmm. sugar is. But what I was seeing in the rotted stuff was these little flat white critters. Mm-hmm. They weren't the worms that... What's the proper name for whatever it is that bores in them?
It's iris borer, and they're actually a caterpillar.
Well, this wasn't a caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
This was more like a flat something or other, and I don't know if it was a separate critter.
Is it white?
Yeah,
really white?
White. Yeah, there are a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, and was this in the rotted part?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably one of them. And you see that from time to time when they anything that rots like that, and they're just taking advantage of the rotten area. They're not really feeding on the good stuff. They're just going for the rotten stuff.
So, you know, they were maybe a quarter of an inch long.
Yeah.
So it
could be actually a maggot type thing. I know it sounds gross, but there are different types of maggots that actually feed on this rotten stuff.
These were flat guys. I was kind of surprised.
Oh,
anyway,
mm-hmm.
I dug this stuff out and
yeah.
cut the dead parts off. And now I've got all these iris I have to replant. There's not a lot left of them, but I've been amazed at how iris can come back even at this late stage.
Yeah,
so I'm going to
yeah.
stick them in the ground and hope for the best.
Yeah,
so I just wanted to point out to people, if they hadn't checked their iris, they might want to do it.
Right. And actually, you bring up a good point. This would be the time to actually go ahead and get rid of that old foliage because often it does contain the eggs for the iris borer. So it's a good time to do a little cleanup.
Yeah. And for the person with the wondering about leaves in the lawn, our solution has been, in places where we don't need lawn, is to plant trees and ground cover and wildflowers, spring native wildflowers. And so we just let the leaves fall there. We have to weed it periodically, dig out volunteer plants that we don't want, but we don't have to do it on a particular schedule, and we don't fertilize it, and we don't rake the leaves, and it cuts down, and we think it cuts down on work. Thanks.
Sure.
Right, thank
and
you.
That's certainly one other way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
There you
and
go.
We don't worry about Creeping Charlie there either. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Let's go to Champaign for the next caller in line three. Hello.
Hi. Great hearing you this morning. I have two things. One, in terms of reusing the potting soil from potted plants, what I always do is in the spring, I take all of the potted plants, dump all of the soil into a big wheelbarrow, and take out the roots and all that stuff, the bigger pieces, and then I just dump a bunch of compost and a bunch of peat moss and maybe some vermiculite and mix it all up again. And my plants have been happy, happy, happy.
Well, that's good.
It makes the soil kind of fluffier. You know, the potting soil tends to get really compacted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great way to reuse the soil. And I always, of course, if you're adding all that other stuff, you have a little left over. So kind of nice.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good idea. And I think you do bring up a good point. It's just the fact that just you need to sort of fluff it up. You need to get some structure back into it. I mean,
right.
Just that process, I think, will help too. So that's good.
Now, a couple of the previous callers have been very accepting of Creeping Charlie. I hate Creeping Charlie. And unfortunately, the only thing that sort of has worked has been kind of a scorched earth stuff. And is there a medium somewhere between there? I've got an infestation. I took a peony, a 100-year-old peony from a friend, and unfortunately it came with some Creeping Charlie, and the Creeping Charlie has come back in force this year. It's been a battle for about the last 7 or 8 years, and it's finally winning, I think. And is there a way to get rid of this stuff without the scorched earth policy?
Okay. So is this in the lawn then, or has it gone into the perennial bed then, or both?
Actually, I've been able to keep it out of the garden area, but it is in the grass. And we live right on the edge of a field, and this year it was corn, next year it'll be soybeans, and it's kind of creeping into the field as well.
Oh, well, that'll make you popular with the neighbors.
Yeah.
And actually, this is not a bad time. I was talking to somebody last night about they were concerned that maybe it was too late to actually be doing any herbicide treatment. But actually, it isn't. I mean, we actually can do some herbicide. Normally, we'd probably like, again, probably like to do it in October, but you certainly could still do some treatment. Probably the thing that works best with Creeping Charlie are some of the herbicides actually contain three different chemicals in them. Trimec is one of the brand names in that boat. And it actually is fairly effective. I think the big thing with Creeping Charlie is one application isn't going to do it, as you probably know.
Right.
But at least with something like Trimec, it's not going to kill the grass, so you still have the grass there. And then hopefully you can beat down the Creeping Charlie enough that the grass will start to vigorously grow. And then next spring, you'll probably have to do it again, I imagine.
I've been using Roundup, and it just kills everything.
The scorch earth. Yeah, the scorch earth
theory. And I really don't like that. Okay, so Trimec is a good option.
Right.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
I apologize to everyone else who's okay with Creeping Charlie.
We have everybody. You know, it's just, that's why
they
make
ice cream
and 64
it is green,
flavors.
So that's the good news.
It is green, and it does cover. It's a ground cover.
It's almost as pernicious, I think, as like kudzu.
Yeah. At least it doesn't go up over things. You know, Creeping Charlie doesn't go over.
And it produces that pretty little purple flower in the springtime.
You're right about that.
There's that.
It is pretty to look at. And it is in the backyard, so if I can't get rid of it, I'm not too unhappy. But I'm afraid that it's going to take over my entire backyard, plus the farmer's field, plus the neighbor's house.
And you will be the epicenter.
That's right. I don't want to be responsible for that. It's too much responsibility.
That's right. The neighbors will be at your front gate with torches.
There we go.
All right.
Thank you so much.
We're talking this morning here about things that grow in the home landscape. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month on a Tuesday, and we take these questions. So we'll continue, and if we can help you out, I know she'll do her best. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Yes, my question, I have a very tiny strawberry patch, and it's right next to my lawn, and the grass has invaded the strawberry patch. And I was wondering, what's the best way to get rid of that without harming the strawberries?
Yeah. Probably your best bet is just to dig it out. And actually, this is a pretty good time to be digging because the soil is really in great shape as far as pulling it out. And I know you probably don't want to hear that. And is it truly the grass is coming in, or are you getting grass from, do you put straw on it?
No, it's truly grass that's...
Oh, that's just creeping in.
Just creeping in.
Yeah. I think your best bet is just to take a sharp spade and just edge the bed, the strawberry bed. And then usually it actually comes up quite easily this time of year.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not what I wanted to hear, but that's
I know it's not what you wanted to hear.
Extra work, right? Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We have somebody here who must be listening on the Internet. They're in California our toll-free line. Hello.
Morning, Chicago. I'm interested in ground cover, and even though I'm out here in California, I am interested in it from the big picture, the global warming picture. It's my understanding that the state of Missouri, many of the people who are interested in native plants have been able to get the State Highway Department to authorize the plantings of native plants along the state highway system. And so it'll help reestablish many of these plants that have been pretty well wiped out over the course of the last 100 years of agriculture. And I'm wondering, with global warming, it's really necessary that we get a lot of these natives reestablished. So I'm wondering if you have any idea whether or not the political climate in Illinois is ripe for getting the state highway systems, maybe some of the regional systems, maybe your sewer boards and different departments of the state and city governments could do more to get some of these natives involved in this. Part of the reason I raise this is that fresh water, it's recently been disclosed that 30% of America's waters are now very tainted with pollution. And the more that we get some of these native plants back in operation, you can essentially, the natives have an ability to break down some of these pollutants and create a realistic freshwater system.
Mm-hmm. Well, and actually in Illinois, there is interest and has been for a number of years along the highway system. And you will find, especially in even here in the Champaign-Urbana area, in the clover leaves around the interstate, you know, it's actually a fairly large land mass. Sometimes those clover leaves take up. And so there is some interest actually and has been done where they actually provided a certain amount of native plants in those areas. So I think there's certainly a lot more interest in native plants and to the point where, you know, within our with our program, the U of I Extension, we certainly do programs on landscaping with native plants. And so I think there certainly is a lot of interest. So I think it's definitely a good trend for a lot of reasons besides just the ones that you mentioned. So that's certainly, we're working on it, I guess, is the
sure.
bottom
well,
line.
One of the aspects that we're going to really need is erosion control.
Mm-hmm.
Hardy plants that, whether they're annuals or perennials, that are going to be able to, one of the models for global warming is that we're going to have massive storms. That storms which will occur normally in the hurricane season or something like that and stay toward the equator, all of a sudden will start blowing further and further north. And we just recently saw that with this hurricane season, a series of hurricanes that were unprecedented for Florida alone. And the idea that these massive storms are then going to push water that should be at the equator vastly north, you're going to have a lot of erosion, a lot of flooding. And when you have these various types of plants that can withstand flooding, deep root plants that can withstand, they won't get washed away if they've got good deep roots. It'll keep our topsoil, and it'll help retain the water in the ground. If you've got the perennials, of course, it'll turn it into trees, it'll turn it into biomass that'll stay local rather than just get washed away down into the rivers and streams again. So we've got to get into this habit of allowing the plants to get tall again and retaining water locally.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you brought up some good points, and I think more and more that we're sort of moving in those directions, and maybe as people listen to conversations like this, that maybe they can encourage their own forces that to get some of those things done. So I think you brought up some good points.
Yeah, right. Appreciate it.
Thanks
have
very
a good
much.
Morning,
uh-huh. Okay.
You too.
We'll just keep on going. Next, back here locally, someone in Champaign. It's line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the mundane lawn care. just a couple of questions. Does it make a difference if I try to get in one last mowing of my lawn before winter? Does it matter if the grass is long or short?
Well, you really don't want the grass overly long over the winter time. You really don't. You don't want it to the point where it's sort of laying over, because you can have some disease problems and things like that going on. So you're better off to do one more mowing. And I noticed a lot of people out mowing this past weekend, and so I wouldn't let it get much more than maybe probably 3 inches would be absolute tops, but probably 2.5 would be better.
Uh-huh.
Well, into winter and into spring.
Yeah, I'm probably borderline there, but I could get out.
And plus, it gives you a chance to sort of mow up some of the leaves and other things.
Well, it's a little tough. I'm still pre-industrial with my reel mower. Do you have an opinion on reel mowers versus power in terms of what it does to your lawn?
As in, is one better than the other one necessarily?
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's a vague question, but does it really make any difference to the grass, how it one cuts versus another? Or it's just arbitrary.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think a reel mower, as long as it's sharp, it probably can do a really good job, maybe even better than the rotary type mowers. I think the problem with the rotary is often people don't keep them sharp enough, and it ends up sort of just tearing the grass off rather than cutting it off. And so you really want it to cut cleanly. So if you look at the grass blades after you've mowed and there's all these little strips and stuff, so it looks like it's been torn, then you need to be doing something as far as making sure that that either one of them are sharp. So I guess that's the biggest thing, is keeping them sharp.
All right. And then part of my lawn is landscaped with a ground ivy. I don't know the exact species. You can probably picture it. That's lots of yards in town have that.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that you can just mow that to maintain it. Is that a good way to do it? That help keep out weeds?
Mm-hmm. Is this English ivy, maybe? Or
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, with a lot of the ground covers, if you mow them high, in other words, and put your mower on its highest setting, many of them can be done that way. You don't want to cut off the very crown of the plant, but you actually can mow over the top of them.
Just maybe
for many of them.
A couple times a year, perhaps?
Yeah, it's just a cleanup kind of thing. It might be something you do in the spring to help clean things up. And
I see. Mm-hmm. Do you have an opinion about allowing that those ground ivies to climb up trees? Does that affect the trees?
It really doesn't affect the trees' health, and actually I think it looks kind of nice. The biggest concern that I have now is, you know, we certainly have a lot of problems with exotic weeds these days, and they have found that when those English ivy go up, that's when they start to flower and set fruit, and then the birds pass the fruit all over the place, and then we end up with problems in our native woodland areas. And so there is a lot of concern for letting them go up for that reason, not because it's hurting the tree. So I would not let them do that simply for that reason. If they go up a little ways and you sort of keep that maintained, that's fine. But I wouldn't, long term, I wouldn't let it go up way up a tree.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Let's see where we are here. We'll go next to Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Oh, Creeping Charlie. Can be pulled. I managed to get it out of my lawn by sort of marking off a square yard at a time and carefully pulling it up, following the runners and pulling all the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And over a period of about 2 years, I got it out. Good. Now, how do you keep it from coming back in? Well, first of all, you have fairly wide flower beds and hedges along the edge of your yard, and when it tries to make a dash across that ground, it's, first of all, it's a little harder for it, and secondly, it's easier to pull than out of the yard. But you know, after about 2 years, I managed to get it all out, and you just keep it out by keeping it from creeping in again.
Yeah.
And also occasionally, you know, it may happen to get seeded, although that's fairly rare.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, you know, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, that's a great way. And do you hire out? I think you could you could be rich if you hire out. You might think about that as a second career.
Yeah, well, as I think I said once before on this program, that it's better than transcendental meditation.
Well, that's
good.
And
the other thing I just wanted to mention also, I'm maybe even more pre-industrial as far as lawn than the previous fellow. I use a scythe.
Oh,
which,
wow.
A southern...
Hey, good for you.
From a Swiss blade and... Southern German scythe handle.
And, good for you.
And you hammer it out, hammer the blade out thin, and then you keep it sharp with a whetstone, and you can keep. I wouldn't want to do acres and acres.
Well, good for you. That's great.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Well, I expect any moment here we're going to be hearing from somebody who has sheep.
Well, you know, that's always been my theory. You know, if you could just have sheep or goats or something, just sort of...
Just let them go out there and...
Wander around for a while.
And graze, and there you go.
And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. Let's talk to somebody in Champaign. Line number 1. Hello.
Yes. I have a question about a couple of rhododendron plants that we put in a few years ago where there had been a big yew tree, evergreen yew. And I understand that the soil for rhododendrons is supposed to be acid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether the fact that a yew tree was there would tell you anything about whether the soil was acid mm-hmm. or not. Mm-hmm. They're struggling.
Well, really, the yews will grow in a wide variety of soils, so it doesn't really tell us too much. If it did well there, at least tells us that it's well-drained, which is good for rhododendrons uh-huh. and stuff. They like a moist soil, but they don't like it to be really wet for long periods of time. Did you add sulfur or anything to the soil when you planted them?
I don't remember that we did that. I had been reading that adding coffee grounds is good, and I've done mm-hmm. that, but that's probably mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. a real jolt of acid. I don't know.
Yeah, you probably need something a little bit more than that.
Uh-huh.
And usually sulfur is your best bet, and this would be a good time of year to go ahead and do that. It's really better if you can actually amend the soil, you know, before you plant them, mm-hmm. so it actually is down in there farther. But now you're at the point where working on the top surface of the soil is at least going to be one thing that you can mm-hmm. do. And then I think through the growing season, I'd think about fertilizing with fertilizer for acid-loving plants, something okay. you actually would put in water, and then actually do a drench that way, and then that would help them as well. The sulfur takes a while for it to actually do what it needs to do as far as making the soil more acidic, so that's why you need this other fertilizer through the growing season to get it going.
Okay.
But I'd almost bet that's probably why they're struggling.
Okay, well, I think also I probably didn't put enough mulch on them last year, but it seemed to be more general than that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good
right.
luck.
Well, thanks for the car.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We have about 15 minutes left in the program here this morning. If people have questions, want to talk with our guest, Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana listeners. We do also have a toll-free line if it would be long-distance call for you. That's 800-222-9455. And again, here we have another caller in Champaign. It's line 2. Hello.
Yes, I had a question. I don't know, maybe somebody's already addressed this. I just got in and near mm-hmm. a radio. Can you still get some grass seed of some kind started this late? Can we do anything like that?
Yeah, it just gets a lot more risky this time of year. Mm-hmm. I think if I had to do something, as in it was just a muddy mess and I really felt like I had to do something, I might do something sort of a short-term grass, mm-hmm. Something like annual rye or something where it, you know, comes up quick, pretty durable in that respect, but it would not be considered a long-term grass, as in next spring I'd probably kill it off and then reseed and, you know, it'd be tough this time of year to spend a lot of money on something like Kentucky bluegrass or some of the more expensive grasses and then be concerned that how well it's going to do. If I had small patches, I might go for it, but I certainly would be very concerned about doing a full lawn this time of year.
Okay, an annual rye, you think?
Yeah, annual rye. It's a quick thing. It comes up fast, and it's at least a cover. It keeps the mud down, and that's probably its biggest.
Right. Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And again, for anybody who maybe we have talked a little bit about fall fertilization earlier mm-hmm. in the program. For anybody who maybe didn't get in on that, it is still possible to mm-hmm. do a fall fertilization
sure.
of the lawn. It's not too late to do that.
Yeah. Usually the last fertilization actually is done a week or so after your last mowing. And so for most of people, maybe they've done it this past week or within the next week or so, they'll probably do their last mowing. So usually we're talking about Thanksgiving time is a good time to think about fertilizing.
Okay. And weed control, can you still do that too?
You know, if the temperatures are high enough, as in we get into it'd be nice if it was at least in the 50s or the 60, mm-hmm. Then you could probably still get some effect. If we start getting much lower than that, then you're probably not going to have as good effect. So you kind of have to look at see what the weather's going to be over the next few days and see how well. October is really a better time, so we're getting a little bit late in the season to do herbicide treatments, but it certainly could still be done.
All right. We have a caller in Woodford County on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Hi. I've got two questions. I've got a burning bush head that's about 5 foot tall. Is it possible to take that down to like a 4 foot tall? And my other question is, I got a new peony last month and planted it, and it came up with a sprout. Is that going to hurt it next year? And I'd like to hang up and listen.
Okay, that's fine. You certainly, as far as the burning bushes, taking it down a foot or so, that's really not a problem. If you can actually do it where you do it individually, as in each branch, you sort of take it down individually with pruners. You have a much more natural shape to it. If you start using hedge trimmers, then they kind of lose their natural look. So you kind of have to decide which route you want to go. But you certainly can prune them down. That's really not a problem with those. The other question was about the peony sending up a shoot, which is just fine if it went ahead and sent up a shoot. That's actually good. So I really wouldn't worry about that too much. So that one should be fine, too.
All right. Another caller, Iroquois County this time. Line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Andy.
Good morning.
I have an herbicide question. To control brush, I chop it off at the ground level, mm-hmm. and paint the stubs with Roundup. Mm-hmm. Is it too late to continue doing that?
It's another one of those things. If the weather is, I would say no. I mean, as long as the weather is, probably with that, it'd have to be probably above 45 or so, at least, for it to be effective. So it should still work.
Okay. So this is an effective method mm-hmm. any month of the year, as long as temperatures then are above 45?
You're going to have, obviously, December, January, where the plants aren't really doing too much. But if there's still, it's still been warm enough and there's still some activity within the plant right now, so I think that's fine. You know, you start looking at December, January, February, I'd wonder a little bit, but then you start getting into March, so there's really not too many months you could probably take off or have to take off. But it's just called cut surface treatment, and it's certainly a labeled use of many herbicides.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Are we at a time now where you can do pruning? And I guess maybe I'm thinking about big woody plants, mm-hmm. maybe trees, big shrubs, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They always say once you start to get late in the growing season, you want to wait until they're really
right.
dormant.
Right.
So are we there?
We're really at that point where most things are at least on their way to being dormant. And I wouldn't have a whole lot of problem with pruning things now. Sometimes there is a concern, especially maybe in September and October, if you were to prune and then also fertilize at the same time, then you might actually encourage some growth by doing both of those at the same time. So I would really think about not doing those at the same time, because mm-hmm. You don't want to encourage new growth that's just going to get killed off for the winter time. So, but beyond that, I think it's really no problem. Probably the only time is maybe if you have something that, you know, is spring flowering, where you might want to wait until after it flowers, certainly on a lot of the shrubs. So things like forsythia and lilac, any of the spring blooming things, you might actually want to wait, not do it now. I usually recommend if people are going to do major pruning, as a really take them down to the ground type of pruning, I usually recommend to wait until like February or March, only because then we're done with the really cold stuff, and then they should have much better chance of getting through that really severe pruning that we might do. So some of that I might delay till spring.
Okay. Well, we certainly have time for, we have about 5-6 minutes time for some other questions if people want to call up. Sandy Mason's here. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We've talked about a few kind of basic end of the season things. We've talked about the fact that you can do bulbs, mm-hmm. you can do mm-hmm. Lawn fertilize mm-hmm. if you want. What other kind of things can people, or maybe should people, be thinking about this time of the year?
Mm-hmm. I think if they have any kind of grafted roses, that would be the other thing. That usually around Thanksgiving time, 1st of December, if you have a grafted rose, you really need to think about covering it to protect that graft. And usually it's just a matter of either soil or well-drained soil from another part of the garden, or maybe if you have compost or something, actually just mound it over the crown of the plant to about 8 to 10 inches. Once that freezes, then you want to put some mulch over the top of that. And usually that's all you need. I'm not a big believer in the rose cones and some of those things, because they actually can get a little too warm in January and February when we don't want them to wake up too early. So certainly think about your roses, and also think about strawberry plants. We do like to go ahead and mulch those with straw, again, usually around the Thanksgiving time. We don't want it to get too much colder than that. So there's a couple activities. So, you know, Thanksgiving, you got all the family over, you know, you need to do something after that heavy meal, right? So take everybody outside and mulch the strawberries and mulch the roses. Okay, maybe
yard
not.
Work.
Nobody wants. No wonder nobody wants to come to my house. For
there's an idea. Well, before we break out the pumpkin pie, we thought we'd go out and do some yard work.
See, it works. It makes sense to me. I don't know.
Well, it depends. That would, could be a start a new family tradition.
See?
If you start them young, maybe you can convince them that that is the kind
That's
of thing
when
that
they never
do.
Come home again.
Well, that might be not such a bad thing. Hey, kids, right when you get work, you know. That's right. Let's see. Bloomington, Illinois. Line number one. We have a caller here. Hello.
Yeah, Jerry here. Got some bittersweet out in the timber. I want to transplant. How do I go about doing that?
Actually, you can't hardly kill this stuff, usually. I would just find some, more than likely you can find some little sprouts here and there, and I would dig them up. I've had fairly good success from the seeds as well. You know, there's male and female to those, so certainly if you use seeds, right. You don't know which one you're getting. But either way, you can't hardly kill them. So
you're saying you can replant just a twig, take a twig, and what you do, just scrape it and put it in the ground or something?
You probably can actually do that as well. I usually there's, if you've got it in your woodland area, you can almost always find a little plant somewhere because they do reseed themselves. So I was just talking about even digging one of those up. I've never tried it from a cutting, but I'd almost bet it would probably work from a cutting, just what you're talking about. We actually take part of the stem. I just make sure that a node where some of the leaves have come off, I'd make sure that some of that is in the ground.
So if I found a plant where the vines are coming up out of the ground,
uh-huh.
I can dig that. How far out from the center of that should I dig? You know, I don't want to dig real close, right? So should I stay out like a tree? They say take the diameter of the tree and then go out that far or something.
Yeah, again, I don't think you can hardly kill them, but I'd say probably a foot or so out each way.
Okay.
That should be plenty.
And the temperature... You saying stuff like that's around 40 degrees?
Yeah, usually, you know, so we're, and actually for something that's woody like that, you could probably get away with doing that now, you know, if you wanted. Okay. I wouldn't wait too much later. But we certainly still plant trees and shrubs this time of year.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Your service here.
There
oh,
you go.
Good.
Well,
good.
Thanks for the call. Let's go on here. We have a caller in St. Joe, and this is line number two. Hello.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We have a couple rose bushes that we put in last year. And my husband picked one, and I picked one. We really don't know much about roses.
Mm-hmm.
He spent a lot of time picking his, and it's supposed to be this beautiful red rose, and I just kind of grabbed one. mine has flowered beautifully, flowered last year, and beautiful again this year. His has yet to get a bud.
Well, I bet that really bugs the heck out of him, too.
I bet this is dinner conversation, isn't it?
He's commenting. And when I cut them and bring them in, he says, oh, I guess that's more, huh? But his just, we call it, they keep saying, Dad, was this really a rose bush? It's more like a thorn bush. Can we assume it's not going to do anything?
So it, does it grow?
Oh, it grows. Like I said, it's like a big
so
thorn
it grows.
Bush.
Well,
yeah,
does
it's very, you know, long and dangly.
Yeah. Does he prune it at all?
He pruned it. He pruned it back once.
Okay.
And it's like I said, there's never been a bud.
Yeah. Well, what I was wondering about, you know, for some of the roses, they actually bloom on old wood. And if you prune them at the wrong time, as in right now or early spring, you're actually cutting off all the old wood or most of the old wood, and so you don't get any flowers off of it. So I'd wonder a little bit about that. And that would be one thought. I, you know, the other thing I'd wonder about a little bit, too, is it possible that the original plant actually died, the graft actually died, and then he's getting all this stuff coming up from the roots?
You know, when we bought them, like I said, I know nothing about roses. We bought them, you know, where it was the plant, and it's just the dormant plant.
Oh.
And so, you know, we put them in at the same time, and like I said...
Right.
And, I mean, at first, actually, we did think it was dead because it was like nothing was coming up.
Yeah, see, I wonder.
And then it started coming up. So you're thinking the original plant died.
Is gone, yeah, because sometimes you get that with grafted plants, and then they'll start suckering up from the roots, which is a completely different rose compared to what you bought.
Well, we'd be happy if it was any kind of rose.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if maybe, you know, maybe it's not his fault. Maybe.
Well, like I said, it was funny. Cause he spent all this time, and it was supposed to be beautiful, and I just grabbed one, and like I said, we don't talk about it a lot.
Yeah, I would think about maybe getting another rose, and maybe keeping this one, just so you have something to, you know, joke about. But
it kind of grabs you if you're going by with the mower.
Yeah,
so I
take
it out.
Yeah, I would almost bet that's probably what's going on. He's probably lost the original rose.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Right. Thank you for the call. Someone wants to call real quick. We could probably get somebody in here in the time that remains. Anything else that just in way of general information that you might like to share with
Well,
people?
It's also a good time to think about preparing stuff for wintertime. If you do have things like we were talking about rhododendrons, certainly evergreens where maybe they're brand new, they're in a real windy area, you might think about putting what's called an anti-desiccant. It's actually a spray you put on the plants to keep them from losing so much moisture through the wintertime. And it's a really good thing for evergreens or anything that sort of hangs onto its needles or leaves during the wintertime, especially when it's real windy. If it's real windy, you might even think about putting up like burlap or something, and especially for brand new rhododendrons or maybe even boxwood or some of those. So it's a good time to think about doing that. And also rabbit control. I know you love rabbits. You know we couldn't get through one show without mentioning rabbits, but they will absolutely eat down roses, especially anything that's new. So if you planted any new shrubs, I'd be out there with the chicken wire hardware cloth, something, and protecting them over the wintertime because the rabbits will annihilate them.
All right, very good. So, I guess one of the things I wonder about, too, is that at what point do you tear out your annuals? Mm-hmm. Do you just leave them there? I guess generally I just leave them there till spring and
pull them
out then. But I don't know, does it really make any difference?
It doesn't really matter. It's really up to you. And for some of them, things like marigolds and zinnias and stuff actually have a certain amount of seeds that for the wildlife. And so actually they'll go ahead and take advantage of some of those seeds. So it really depends on how you think it looks and from there.
Okay. Well, I guess at about that point, we'll finish up for this time around with the promise that next month, ladies and gentlemen, she'll
December.
Be back in December. So we just decided we just could not bear to be without her.
Yeah.
And she's always, all these years, she said, well, I will come during the winter. So, yes. So next month, she'll be back again, second Tuesday, and we'll do it all again. Well, thank
you
very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sandy Mason, she is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Support for the broadcast today is provided by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois. They're on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. The programming is also made possible by a grant from the Living Yoga Center in downtown Champaign, offering a variety of classes designed to help students bring balance into their lives by finding strength and serenity through the practice of yoga. Classes are ongoing. Individuals can start anytime. For more information, call 384-5829 or visit their website at www.livingyogacenter.net. Coming up a little bit later today on the Afternoon Magazine, we'll be talking about the personality test. Millions of Americans are tested every year, and the results definitely have the power to alter people's lives. The basic question is, how are they used, these tests, and are they valid? Today, Celeste Quinn will be talking with journalist Annie Murphy-Paul. She's the author of a new book entitled The Cult of Personality, How Personality Tests Are Leading Us to Miseducate Our Children, Mismanage Our Companies, and Misunderstand Ourselves. That's all as part of the Afternoon Magazine. Celeste Quinn is the host. The show gets underway at noon here on AM 580 with the usual mix of news and weather and sports and updates on the financial markets. And then this conversation about personality testing will be in the 1 o'clock hour of the show. Coming up in the next part of this program, we'll be talking with a writer named Douglas Glover. He was born and grew up in Canada, now is teaching in the United States. He teaches at Vermont College, and we'll talk a bit about his writing and about teaching writing with him. He's visiting the campus, and we'll be giving a reading later on today at the Illini Union Bookstore down on the campus. So that's up in the next hour. We'll have news at 1 minute past. Before that, though, an update on the commodity market, so please stay tuned.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.